Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Modiwa Gabaza, and for today, we are going to be getting into the world of banking, but more specifically, the world of digital banking as it pertains to the African continent. And we're going to be having a really great discussion around that, talking to the team from Backbase. And, for today, I'm happy to say that we are joined by Heidi Custers, who is joining us from Amsterdam. She is the Digital Transformation Director over at Backbase, and we're going to be having a discussion. They recently brought out a report, around, the state of the industry, particularly around digital banking transformation for 2024, and it looks to be a really great discussion. Heidi, greetings to you today.
Hi, Modiwa. Lovely to be here. Thanks.
Okay, so before we get into the report, you're joining us from Amsterdam. You're part of Backbase. Maybe we can get the elevator pitch on Backbase, just so that people understand the context that you're coming from before we go on.
Of course. Backbase is a financial technology firm. We work with around 162 customers around the world. We're headquartered in Amsterdam, but we have hubs in 15 countries. And one of those is of course, two of them are based on the African continent. We are an engagement banking platform. So if I break that down, that's essentially the digital layer in which banking customers and employees of a bank interact. This is where if you were a banking customer, you would open a banking app on your phone or on your computer, and you would do all your daily banking, lending, investing, etc. Backbase is the engine behind those things, and often also the screens that you look at as a banking customer. So that's who we are and what we do. And I work specifically in the Africa hub, helping to digitally transform banks across the African continent.
So for yourselves as Backbase, maybe as a quick follow-up, how big is Africa in your universe?
It's pretty darn big. We actually have a saying inside Backbase, Africa first. we're seeing the largest growth of digital transformation proportionally on the African continent. A lot of the digital transformation efforts around the rest of the world, especially some of the more traditional Western markets, they're slowing down. And the incredible speed of digital transformation that has happened in Africa in the last 5 years means that as a global technology company, our focus is firmly on the continent. Our Middle East and Africa hub is, in fact, the largest hub inside our business at the moment.
That's actually, quite interesting because what we often hear about is the fact that Africa has probably leapfrogged a lot of regions when it comes to financial technology. And we often hear about countries like South Africa being quite mature when it comes to banking. But I guess to then hear that, at least on the banking side, that you do have a lot of attention, across the continent. That's actually something good, to hear about. All right. So let's get into, some of the things that are happening, in the sector. Where I want to start is when we talk about digital transformation in banks, what exactly are we talking about? And this is a question that I've asked to a number of banks here in South Africa because people often talk about digital transformation, but our point of departure is often, but guys, as banks, you guys have technology and systems at the core, and it's not like your technology and systems are anything new. It's been decades of having some of these, systems in place. So when we talk about digital transformation, like what are we actually saying? Because in a number of industries, when they say digital transformation, they talk about a move to technology. But for a sector that has already been so technically enabled, what does transformation mean in a space like that?
That is a very, very good question. And funny enough, depending on who you ask, even those in the know and in the industry itself, will usually get a different answer. But the way that we see it, and certainly the way that I see it with my work on the continent, is that digital transformation in banking is, funny enough, less about the tech. You're absolutely right. It's really changing the way that we do business around the fact that customers of banks, whether they be small businesses, large corporates, or your average daily consumer, they're becoming more digital. The usage of applications and smartphones around the world has become ubiquitous and is certainly growing massively on the continent. The use of digital currency or in Africa, mobile money payments is becoming ubiquitous as well. But we still have around 90% of the continent using cash as their primary payment form. But really, digital in the customers of the banks is becoming so critical to their lives. And therefore, the banks have to change the way they do business. And that is what digital transformation is. They have to reorganize themselves around their customers. They have to change their processes primarily. They have to change their products. And they have to change the way that their people respond to the customers. The combination of those three things is simply underpinned and enabled by technology. Technology is the thing that gets these things done. And therefore, digital transformation is changing your processes, changing your organizational structure, changing your strategy, and certainly changing the products and the way they are delivered to your customers that meet their digital needs. That's the way we look at it at Backbase. In fact, our tagline as a company is, reorganize yourself around your customer, or re-architect yourself around your customer.
So do we make a distinction then between, because like I said at the beginning, there's a lot that has been said about the fintech revolution on the African continent. Do you make a distinction between banks and their investment and use of technology versus, I guess, what are now considered your fintech operators? Because in essence, they are trying to address, you know, specific customer pain points. So, for example, how do we loop in a segment that would otherwise not be open to credit by scoring them differently? You know, for example, like how, yeah.
Absolutely. There needs to be a distinction made. But what's more interesting than the distinction is why there's a distinction, and specifically why in Africa. So I like to liken the fintechs a little bit like speedboats. But they usually move very quick. Like they can turn very, very quickly and they go very, very fast. And that means that they're able to go ahead of anybody else who's on the water. But banks, they're like cruise ships. They may not be able to go fast, but they can go very far. And this is what's happening between fintechs and banks. So first of all, the differentiation is on the African continent and elsewhere in the world as well, the fintechs have been often the first to address the changing needs of the customers, you know, give them credit, as you say, when credit has not been available, or connect disparate systems on the back end to bring payments in a new way to customers. And in Africa, we have, of course, the third dimension of the telcos, which almost act like fintechs in this space. And while banks are like cruise ships, they're a lot bigger and they maybe take a little bit longer to turn, they're the ones who have the trust of the customers. And often they hold our money. We can get quick credit from somewhere else. But when we have to make big decisions and we have to take large amounts of credit in mortgages or vehicle loans or business loans, it's the banks we go to for those. And therefore, their digital transformation, while it may take longer, should have a longer and a more far-reaching effect. And then finally, most interesting thing that's starting to happen now is the convergence of the two. Previously, we've seen fintechs to be a competitor to banks, and people have been worried. I can't tell you, Madima, how many presentations I used to stand in and listen to in banks about 5-6 years ago, and there was this ever threat of the fintechs coming to eat our lunch. What's happening now is partnerships between fintechs and banks, sometimes even acquisitions. If we look like companies like SnapScan being acquired by Standard Bank, et cetera. So it's less of a competition and more of a co-opetition that needs to start happening now, because we've got a combination of the fast, the speedboat, and the far, the cruise ship. And that's how they're going to come together on the continent.
All right. And it certainly does make sense. And funny enough, that is something that we've spoken to the banks quite a bit about, you know, to say our fintech players, friends or foe. And, you know, you do see maybe a changing, you know, of the sentiment, you know, over the years, at least in my experience, where, you know, there was sort of an adversarial, you know, sort of relationship back in the day. But now, you know, I guess people are realizing that we might as well work together, especially if your base is going to allow us to do something that we can't do, then we might as well, you know, to use your analogy, let's leverage your speedboat, you know, to get us to a particular destination. Then the rest of the ship will also just, you know, catch up, you know, after time. But for now, we'll partner with you guys because you're faster and you can get, you know, some of these things done. One of my curiosities, especially as someone who's looking at it across the continent, is when it comes to the pace, of digital transformation in the banking sphere, what are some of the drivers in the different regions? Because obviously the continent is not homogenous, so there's things that are going to be different. Let's say in West Africa, where I think there's more informal trade versus you know, other parts of the continent. So what are you guys seeing, and what are some of the insights that have come out from the report in that regard?
Absolutely. I'm going to even further stress what you said about the continent not being homogenous. And it's something that I think very few global technology companies really fully understand and acknowledge, that the vast differences in the way business is done, but also the way behavior and culture drives the way that people use digital channels between North, East, West, North, East, West, South, and Central Africa is massive. So we're seeing this as well. So if I go into some specifics that are in the report this year as well, if we go and look at East, for instance, right? East Africa has always been the darling of digital transformation in the financial services space when we look at it in Africa, because mobile money completely transformed there first, right? Starting with M-Pesa, now becoming totally ubiquitous. And even in 2024, the East African countries, and specifically Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, are building on that reputation and that legacy, that foundation that they built in innovation. So if we're looking at that, they are now moving to the next stage. They innovated so beautifully about mobile money around consumers, and then in some cases in partnerships with telcos, like the Equitel partnership. But now they're starting to look at SMEs, and we're actually seeing the East African influence and innovation in small and medium businesses leading the charge, the same way they did with mobile money. 39% of East African banks are prioritizing SMEs, that sector, as their digital investment for the next year over all their other sectors. They're saying essentially, we feel our work has been done to a certain degree in retail. We're going into maintenance mode. And now it's the small businesses who are the backbone of the economy who will become our biggest focus. Only 15% of the banks in East Africa are actually focusing their investment in the next year on in digital transformation on retail customers as opposed to SMEs. So that's one of the big ones. The other thing is in South Africa, there are big inroads into digitalization. So that's really going down into the legacy systems and trying to undo a lot of legacy. And that's the thing that South Africa or Southern Africa, mostly South Africa, tends to struggle with when we compare it to, say, East Africa, who had more of a greenfields approach. They were able to innovate without the pain of legacy pulling them down as much. South Africa has technology at its heart in many of the big banks, but that technology is old. They are mainframes, often COBOL mainframes, a piece of technology that hasn't been used in other sectors in decades. And to undo decades of legacy is something that they're particularly having to struggle with. 93% of the South African banks that we interviewed in this report said that legacy systems are the main thing that impede their ability to innovate. So while East Africa are going great, we're building on innovation, we're moving to the next sector, South Africa banks are now starting to have to figure out how to progressively modernize very old mainframe stacks.
You know, when you bring up the word legacy, I get so excited because to this day, I do not understand how, because at least to my understanding, there are a number of different players, you know, that built some of these systems. And I believe as early as the 80s, you know, certain systems that were made by the likes of SAP and IBM, you know, way back in the day. And there are probably like a handful of people in the whole country that still understand how some of those, you know, systems, especially those core banking systems, you know, work to this day. And one of the things I'm always just asking is, guys, like, because I've heard many different arguments for and against. Obviously, the against is exactly what you're talking about. It makes the ship slower, right? Our ability to upgrade the ship and, you know, push it forward is made slower. But I've heard some people say, well, you know, these systems are more secure because, well, how many hackers are actually going to bother to actually try to understand these very old systems that hardly anyone knows about? So, you know, maybe there's something to be said about keeping, you know, some of that legacy. But I then think about the consumer experience that continues to suffer from some of those legacy issues. Simple KYC of, if I apply for a vehicle loan at my bank, I'm asked for the same documents that I submitted when I opened my retail banking account. And chances are, if I go for a home loan, it's going to be the same process. And it's like, but guys, why are these things just not talking to each other?
Yes. And the experience that you've just described, I think until recently, that was just something that you put up with as a banking customer. It was frustrating, but it was the same experience no matter which type of organization you dealt with, whether it was a bank, an insurance company. There were very few companies who gave an amazing experience. But banking customers are now saying, I'm sorry, I'm actually going to churn because new things are starting to come into the market, not just fintechs, but new banking entrants are coming in and they don't have that legacy necessarily. So the risk of churn, and churn on the African context, I just want to be clear here, this is very different from in Europe. In Europe, if you churn from a bank, that means you close a bank account, which is very easy to do, and you open a new one and you move all your money. The behavior on our continent with churn is actually multi-banked behavior. You just move your main source of income into a different bank account. You keep the old one, but you stop using it, and therefore you just become a cost for that bank. You stop being a source of revenue for them. That's what I mean by churn. That is a real danger if banks don't understand how to attack this legacy problem. And I'd say up until around 2020, the large consulting firms, and I'll put my hand up here as someone who was guilty of that when I worked for one of those large consulting firms, we thought it was really easy to go in and say to a bank, you need to change everything. Go on, just big bang approach, throw that old legacy system in the bin, start renew, get this amazing new cloud-based thing. And as you said, there are more secure. They're embedded for 40, 50 years in some cases. It's not as easy as switching on a light or switching off the light to change that amount of legacy without massive implications, both internally to your own process and also to the customer experience. It often gets worse before it gets better when you take a big bang approach. So the point of view that is really important now is progressive modernization, which is just a fancy term for eating that elephant one bite at a time. Go and attack the customer layer first, the most important one, the one that faces those customers that are wanting to churn. And then layer by layer, go in and change until that old global mainframe that's sitting and bringing the whole bank to its knees, it's only looking after maybe a few really critical processes that nothing else can do. And then eventually that dies too. It's really not something you can do in a matter of 5 years. And that's the big shift that's starting to happen.
You know, it was actually quite interesting to hear you talking about the difference in, I guess, churn behavior. You know, like what you were saying. And for a moment, I was just thinking of my own behavior and the behavior of some of my own colleagues and friends. And yeah, it's true. Many of us have multiple accounts that are being used because you sort of shop around for who's giving you the best experience for XYZ, and you just go there. And then, you know, the moment that it's not serving you, Yeah, I've never actually sat down to actually close a bank account. I'd never thought about it until you brought it up. Until you brought it up now. So it is an interesting one. And I guess that legacy factor, you know, would explain why a lot of the so-called neobanks are being seen as being so attractive, and why some of them have at least made the traction that they've been able to make, in the market. When I hear some of the utterances from the likes of Time Bank in South Africa, and the fact that they've seen so much growth that they're even contemplating a listing soon, it sort of shows you the rate at which people are, I guess, looking for and responding to a different type of offering in the market. Because at the end of the day, deposits are deposits, lending is lending. But I guess the differentiator then becomes, you know, how are you offering it to me?
Exactly. Do you know me? Do you know me is not just how much data do you have on me. You use time as an example. And I think the most amazing thing, I love it when people talk about Time Bank, because it's when people talk about neobanks in a global context, they talk about really sexy digital experiences that are offered by Revolut and Monzo and Starling in Europe. But when we talk about our neobank, and that in one of them in Time, the reason why they've gotten such an amazing growth is not because they have the world's sexiest digital experience, but because they deeply understand that they need to be where the customer is, and they need to invest their technology in that. And where the customer is buying food on a Saturday morning. And if you can do your banking while you're buying food, well, that's wonderful.
Yeah. It's a very interesting space to be in. And I guess when we talk about customer experience, this sort of lends itself to why people should be, researching and trying to improve those types of things, you know, a little bit more. Okay, so one of the things I really wanted to do during this conversation was to attack some of the big buzzwords that float around when it comes to financial services, banking, and technology. We've spoken quite a bit about what people consider as fintech, in a number of different aspects. We've also spoken to an extent about neobanks, all that, right? A lot of the banking institutions also have an insurance piece. And that's another buzzword that's been coming up over the last couple of years, insurtech, you know. Buzzword, or is anything to say about insurtech?
I actually think insurtech might be much more exciting in the long term than financial technology or fintech or banking tech. And the reason, again, comes down to consumer behavior, right? So yes, banking is a grudge purchase. I mean, we really wish we didn't have to bank. But is there any greater grudge purchase in the world than insurance? Nobody wants to insure anything. You're only excited about insurance when your stuff is taken or your health is at risk. It is the only time. And therefore, insurance is an inherently emotional sector. It's emotional on one side because nobody wants it and everybody feels like they're wasting their money on it. And it's emotional on the other side because when you actually have to use it, you've usually experienced a loss and that loss is hurting you. So digitally transforming insurance is so powerful because there's so much inherent emotion in insurance. If you can make it faster, easier, if you can make it so that I don't feel that it's happening, if you can make it so that when I actually need to claim, when I actually need to do something, that emotion that comes with it, you understand me, you understand the space that I'm in, you make it seamless for me, you don't ask me to fill out lots of forms. Insurance needs to become invisible, and only technology and really good understanding of data and how to leverage that using technology can make a sector become invisible. And that's why insurtech for me is not a buzzword. Insurtech is going to be incredibly exciting if it's done well. Look at some of the insurtech businesses that have launched recently. Just look at South Africa. My insurance company in South Africa, my short-term insurance company in South Africa, it launched 2019 or 2018, I think it's called Naked. And I was one of the first people to use Naked Insurance for my car insurance. And the reason I did it is because I traveled so much for business. So my car would sit inside an airport for weeks on end. And then COVID hit and my car was in the garage. And they were the very first insurance company to offer the fact that because I wasn't driving my car, I didn't have to have full comprehensive. I could drop down to third party fire and theft. And the fact is their business is all based on technology. There's no call center. There's no big office. It's all AI based. And they were able to pivot so quickly because they're a technology based business with such a massive change. And when all the other big insurance companies were scrambling to figure out how on earth do we keep making money when the first people thing people are cutting is potentially their car insurance, this InsurTech had already gone ahead of the curve. So for me, InsurTech.
Mudiwa,
I could talk about it for ages, but let's not.
No. We'll save InsurTech, for another day, for a proper deep dive. Interestingly enough, we've actually had the team from Naked on this platform a number of times. I'm happy to say that as early as 2019, we went to their offices because they are relatively close to where we are. And we're like, what are you guys doing? I'd never heard of a company that says you can pause your cover. It was a very interesting way. And as you said, a lot of the time it's not something that is completely out there. I guess it's the simplicity, where a lot of the innovation actually, where the innovation actually lies.
Exactly.
So going forward then, Heidi, one of the things that I'm keen to get your take on is when you look at, I don't know if I can even call it the future of banking, but I guess the direction that banking is going in. Banks and the rest of the financial services world have tended to have a siloed approach. You know, if you're a specific type of bank, maybe you're doing retail banking, you're doing maybe some vehicle finance, maybe you're doing some home loans. Then if you want to do investments, then you've got an asset manager. If you want to do even in the vehicle asset space, you know, you have a separate arm for that. If you want insurance, you have an insurer, that type of thing. But what's been fascinating to watch is the development of some of the mobile-based fintech companies, right? When I think about using MTN as an example, they will have UBank as being the banking partner. I think it's UBank is now African Bank. They will be the banking partner, you know, for deposits and all that. On PayShop, it's Investec that becomes the partner for that. As they start doing, short-term loans to small businesses, you bring in Jumo. They then become, a partner for that. So you now have all of these different services under, I guess, an MTN umbrella, but they're being facilitated by, all of these partners. So when it comes to the future, maybe what I'm asking is the future of financial services as a whole type of question. Do we continue to see, operators trying to do as much as possible in-house? Or do we lend ourselves towards what we're seeing with some of the fintechs? Because you did mention it earlier on that maybe there's something to be said about partnerships, going forward. And I think when it comes to digital transformation, just keen to get your thoughts around that.
So for me, this is what I term industry convergence. So, and if I say I'm very, very confident that for me, Africa is the home of industry convergence. This is where I've done talks around the world and spoken to executives in lots of different markets. And when they hear about the sheer level of industry convergence on our continent, they are astounded. And that is amazing. So if we go and look at like the fact that the biggest bank in Kenya is a telco, the fact that in Zimbabwe, 70% of Zimbabweans will do all their financial transactions using their telco once they only use their bank to either get money in and then they sweep it out immediately. and then all of their financial transactions are being done using their telco, that industry convergence is critical. So therefore, this idea of partnering, whether it's big partnerships like in Kenya when Equity Bank partnered with Airtel to make Equitel, that's a two behemoths coming together to partner. In fact, Standard Bank and MTN were flirting for a number of years, and there were some industry pundits saying that potentially that was going to be the industry behemoth. I don't know what the Competition Commission would have thought about that, but it's could have been interesting. Or if there are smaller partnerships, like you say, where we have the Jumos of the world and coming in and forming ecosystems. Firstly, it's critical. I believe it's the future of financial services. In fact, this thinking of like a super app, you know, like a one application for everything, it can only be driven by multiple different companies coming together and creating an ecosystem. We are not going to have a WeChat on the continent that comes in and one company provides all those services. It's simply not the way we work in Africa. So that industry convergence is, first of all, I believe the long-term future of financial services, and two, potentially the only real threat that the banks may have. And therefore, partnering and being the underlying capability that enables financial services, right? They've got the banking license, so they need to do that. That is actually potentially the best role. A bank who understands that, who says, okay, but hold on, we've got the banking license and we've got the trust and the ability to lend, but we may not have the access to the connection, the telcos. They have the access to the connection. You hold the cell phone in your hand. We may not have the speed that the speedboats have. A banker can acknowledge that. And also, I think, be vulnerable enough to acknowledge their own silos. I mean, you said earlier, banking is silos. I don't think, as much as we've made some inroads into it, I don't think the silos have shifted that much in the banking industry. It's a controversial thing to say, but I work with banks every day. So I can tell you that I, not only as a banking customer, but also as a consultant to them, I see those silos and I see how it slows them down. But if they can get beyond that and they can move toward a partnership mindset to overcome their own internal silos, yes, we could see some incredibly interesting things happening on our continent that would make the whole world look at us and go, wow, it's not the tech giants who are going to take over Africa. It's actually the African businesses coming together.
No, very key, because at least as someone who, I'm going to call myself a casual observer of the banks, the siloed approach, does seem to slow down, a lot of things. So, I guess it's, like I said, it has been interesting to see how some of the other players that are rethinking, how do you offer financial services? And especially if you've got an existing base and you're like, okay, we've got this existing base, 60 million or whatever it is. Let's see what type of partnerships we can strike, where it becomes mutually beneficial. These people, or they exist with a license, but they can make money from, the scale that, we're bringing onto their book or onto their platform. So it is an interesting one. Yeah.
Something they really do have to get over first. So this is really interesting. It's actually something that's come out of the recent Africa Banker and Backbase Digital Transformation Report is, I think many of the banks and large corporates in general, this is not just a banking issue, but many of the large corporates and banks on the continent kind of suffer from a little bit of a "it wasn't built here" mindset, which if it wasn't built here, it's not good. So that's what I mean by that is they've turned themselves into what they think are software companies. They insist on building all their technology in-house. And on the face of it, that doesn't seem like a bad idea because at least you get something that's purpose-built for you. But the majority of technology, especially banking technology, is just plumbing. It's just payments. It's connecting one system to another system. It's orchestrating things. So if the banks are going to spend so much money and so much of their time on doing the plumbing, they never get to the great stuff. They never get to being able to partner with other businesses on the continent or give their customers what they really need. Our report says that 38% of the banks that we interviewed, so we interviewed 155 banks across Africa, North, South, East, West, and Central. And 38.5% of them, they'll say that they want to do all the development of their systems in-house. That's mad. That's because there are fintechs, there are software companies, there are so many things you can leverage to go faster. About 27% of them said, yes, we do some hybrid approach. We build some and we use some third-party collaboration. And a third of them said, yes, we primarily do third-party collaboration. But when you go underneath that, it's actually the really small ones who can't afford the salaries of the tech brains who go for third-party collaboration. The bigger the bank and the more likely they are to enter into this great ecosystem and industry collaboration space, the more likely they seem to be to want to build everything in-house. And that further drives the silo conversation.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And when you actually sit down and you think about it, right, globally, you've got a lot of different, payments providers, payments facilitators, think Visa, MasterCard, the Swift guys, on the continent, the likes of Flutterwave, Paymentology, all of those guys, they're literally sitting in the background, trying to help, literally like what you said, the plumbing, aspect of this. And in many cases, that's just stuff that rather just partner, in such a situation and get things going from that point of view. Now, as we are about to land this conversation, Heidi, one of the things that you can tell us whether came out of this in your report is, I guess, the regulatory environment, because one of the things that's quite interesting is the fact that when you think about South Africa's credit markets, for example, or just banking, one of the things that has done well for this environment, at least in South Africa, is the fact that there is a centralized national ID system of some sort that has helped, to enable things. In India, there was like a huge push because the goal for government was we want everyone in the country to have a bank account, but they realized that they couldn't have bank accounts without at least having the population on an ID of some sort, and especially a digital ID, because it would make, KYC and all of that stuff much, much easier to do. And I think right now they've implemented a system where if you want to open a bank account or if you want to register a SIM card, what we call RICA in South Africa, you literally just go, as long as you can just verify biometrically your data, then you don't have to submit any documents. They literally just do a link, with the government, and you can go about your life. Your thoughts just around regulation on the continent, some of the gaps that you are sort of maybe seeing as being impediments to, maybe the digital transformation that we're yearning for.
Yeah, so glad you brought this up. It is the enabling environment, right? You can spend as much money as you want, even though the banks aren't spending nearly enough. You can spend as much money as you want on putting the tech in, but if the regulatory environment is impeding it, it becomes difficult. I think what we were talking about in India, that was laid the foundation for the unified payments interface, which is absolutely transformative. The ability to have one system that powers multiple bank accounts into a single mobile app that allows the participating banks to allow interbank payments without needing to have all those details. And we have that now beginning in South Africa with the Rapid Payments Program. And this is a fundamental enabler. This is a massive piece of regulatory enablement to almost everything. So having that is really important. That's, if we can get countries doing that and get the payment rails working seamlessly, we can get to a point where, like the unified payments interface in India, nobody ever has to know, what bank you were paying from, what bank you were paying to, have a bank account. That information is just happening in the background. You can log on to government systems and pay really easily. You can do all sorts of things. Lending is really facilitated by this because it's all sitting on the same rail. But on the other side, you said the gaps, right? So yes, in South Africa, for instance, we've got RPP in the PayShap world, but that's good. On the other side, the key piece of regulation that seems to be slowing us down is cloud and data. The regulators, the central banks on our continent, are so far behind on their understanding of carbon data. They're risk averse, which is understandable. We have a lot of fraud on the continent, especially when technology is not implemented in a safe way. And we have to keep our people safe because we don't have the access to capital on a personal basis that your typical European has. However, there is an unintended consequence in taking away when you deregulate cloud like they have in Mozambique. In Mozambique, a bank cannot have any of its systems on the cloud. Everything has to be on-premise. Now, it sounds great. It's safe. Like you said earlier, who's going to hack my big mainframe in my basement? Except that means a bank can't accelerate its innovation by working with a Twilio or a Google or any of the companies that are inherently cloud-based. Those fintechs that they need to partner with simply aren't allowed to play because they're all cloud-based and they're not going to be building giant data centers in Maputo. So this is the key piece of regulation that the central banks need to get some pragmatism around. They need to understand that there is a balance between safety and innovation, and that sometimes striking that balance is the difference between improving your economy by allowing the cloud players to come and improve the speed at which your bank is able to innovate and offer better experiences to its customer versus, oh, wait, hold on, if we put things on the cloud or we allow a break in our data sovereignty laws, like in Nigeria, the data sovereignty laws are crazy. We keep our people safe, but we slow down innovation to the point where if it's not homegrown, it does not happen. And I'm not saying that innovation must come from outside. Somewhat like the speedboat, sometimes it comes first from outside while we are building it ourselves. And if we're going to basically strangle some industries and say, I'm sorry, there's no cloud because we want everything to be homegrown, but also the economy is struggling, so good luck with building those homegrown things, it means that we're stuck in a limp. So I think that's probably the biggest gap. Is the data sovereignty laws and the lack of understanding of the power of really good cloud legislation from central banks. The Saab, by the way, definitely leading the charge there, I would say. And I think that's really encouraging. But if you look at some of the other countries, I point to Mozambique, Nigeria, Nigeria is such a big player on the continent. There's something to be said for opening up those data sovereignty laws and allowing that to drive more innovation. Flutterwave is great, but you need to have Google in play there as well, and Amazon, and they need to be able to play there too.
Yeah, that's very true. My hope is that some of these hurdles can be overcome. One of the markets that I've taken a keen interest in and keep an eye on is remittances, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's a huge informal movement of money, on the continent, and there's probably a lot of money being left, on the table by tax authorities across the continent as well as banks on the continent, because either the cost of sending, money across borders using the banking system is too expensive for a lot of people, or it's just too slow, right? In a lot of cases, it's just too slow in a lot of cases. So the fact that there's such a huge market for the likes of, MoneyGram, WorldRemit, Mukuru, and, all of those other players, the likes of MTN, Vodacom, which also now play in the remittance space, it does show that individually, because it would be great if there was like a nice meshing above of interconnect across different banking systems on the continent, but I guess you need to have it functioning in country. You have to have that enabling environment, exactly like what you said. You must have that enablement happening in country first before we can attack, this thing above.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I have a funny analogy here. So when the central banks don't cooperate or where they try to slow down innovation because they're suspicious of new technology, it always makes me think a little bit of, you opened our interview by telling everyone I'm sitting in Amsterdam. It makes me think a little bit about the way that the Dutch government approaches some things that people from the UK come to Amsterdam for on weekends in places like the red light district. And what I think the Dutch government really understands is that it's going to happen anyway. You may as well create an enabling environment for it and a safe environment for people, and also something that is taxable. You do those three things, then legislation can actually pave the way for safety and innovation, rather than letting things that are already happening. Our remittances are already happening across the borders. They happen in the dark, and they happen in a way that's not technologically enabled. And that is impeding our banks from being able to cooperate with each other, our companies from being able to cooperate with each other. I mean, I work with Standard Bank Group quite deeply, and it's frustrating just for the group that their countries have such different legislation. Can you imagine being the central IT architect at Standard Bank Group and building a cloud strategy, and some of your countries simply don't allow cloud?
Yeah, no, it is quite a tall mountain to climb, and hopefully over time we'll be able to have some more answers, and a lot more people, you know, like Heidi, that are trying to solve some of these issues on the continent. So that's where we end off. It has been a really great discussion. I think we definitely went into the weeds there a little bit on some of the points, but some of us are nerds and geeks about this stuff, so always happy to engage around some of these things. Some of the key things that did come out, just talking about the state of digital transformation as it pertains to banks on the continent, one of the distinctions that Heidi was talking about is to say that, at least within the African context, it's less about the technology but more about what can you allow people to do, what type of behavioral change can you actually inspire or influence through the use of technology. And that's one of the things that some of the fintech players have been able to do. And throughout the conversation, I like the analogy that we were using to say that, banks are like ships. They can go far, but probably at a very slow pace, whereas your fintech companies are like speedboats. They can go really fast, but the distance they can cover, does remain, a little questionable. And that happy middle is where you have a lot more partnerships, taking place within the financial services sector using technology, and that over time we're likely going to see, can I call it platform banking, taking place?
That's the perfect term.
Yeah, platform banking, where you have a number of different operators using one interface, with the customer, but having a number of different layers and players enabling all of the different bits, in the background. And then, of course, just talking about some of the gaps on the continent, some of the things that Africa has done well, such as mobile payments and mobile money, and some of the advancements that have happened. And then we ended off talking about some of the regulation that could help us, to push digital transformation even further. And the point that Heidi made is the fact that, at least having something robust and solid around, cloud across the continent would certainly help us to go a long way. So that's been it. We were in conversation with Heidi Custers, who is joining us, as we said, from Amsterdam, just giving us some insight, into Backbase's, African Digital Banking Transformation Report for 2024. Heidi, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Madiwe. That was great.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.